I really appreciated Todd's prayer because there are lessons in chapters 4 and 5 that pertain to exactly the things that he was talking about in the prayer. Very practical lessons for us relative to obeying God and the consequences for failure. Before we get to chapters 4 and 5, let's just have two or three questions by way of review. Chapter 1, if you had to take a verse out of chapter 1 that captures the idea, do you remember what verse we pointed to? Somebody comes to you and says, what is all this about? You look at verse 28, it tells you. Verse 28, such was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. So you see a scene of power, of majesty. The imagery is of God riding on his chariot of cherubim, going anywhere, seeing everything, doing whatever is his will. Nothing is able to stop him. And that sets the stage for Ezekiel's prophecies. Are they credible? If this being is the one that's going to bring his prophecies to pass, indeed they are. Furthermore, the very next chapter, chapters 2 and 3, are about what? Ezekiel's commission. And in our prayer with Todd, we talked about men doing their work and preaching the word. Chapter 1 is a prelude to that. What will cause a man to take with solemnity his work of teaching the gospel? Chapter 1, the glory of the Lord, the God that he's serving. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, when Paul wrote to Timothy, he said, I charge in the presence of God and of Jesus Christ, who is the judge of the living and the dead, by his appearing in his kingdom, preach the word. And so in that first verse, he calls to Timothy's attention the glory of the Lord, that he's coming back in glory. And that sets the stage for Timothy doing his work. Timothy was going to face difficult circumstances as well. That's indicated in 2 Timothy chapter 3 as well as in chapter 4. But men who are seeking to please God, not men, will not be deterred by that. Ezekiel in chapters 2 and 3, we had a set of markings, or families of words that we looked at, all the way through in chapter 2 and verse 2, three times he points out the nature of his work. What are those words? Chapter 2 and verse 3. What's going to make his work difficult? A rebellious people. And so he says in verse 3, it's a rebellious people. They've rebelled against me. They've transgressed against me. That's the kind of people you're going to. And so there might be a tendency on Ezekiel's part either to be discouraged, what's the use, or to be afraid and thus be intimidated. Whatever the case may be, you have these two chapters that are impressing Ezekiel with his work. And where in chapter 1, Ezekiel sees his vision of the glory of the Lord, at the end of chapter 3, you'll note in verse 23, you're back to that vision. And so on each side of his commission is you have this vision of the glory of the Lord that impresses him with his work. So now we have chapters 4 and 5. Now Ezekiel is an unusual book in the way that his prophecies were given. Various unusual signs. A sign serves the purpose of indicating or pointing someone to something. And so we have these signs that we read about in chapters 4 and 5. Now on your lesson, we have an outline of chapter 4. You have the three signs that are there. In the first three verses, you'll see in verse 1, now son of man, get yourself a brick. When we think of a brick, we may think of a brick that's been made and fired in a kiln, but that's not the idea here. It's a brick that may have been made out of clay and hardened, and they could still inscribe upon it. And that's what he's going to do. He's going to get this brick, and he's going to inscribe upon it the city Jerusalem. So I don't know what kind of stylus he used or whatever to inscribe on that brick, but that's clear that this brick is going to represent the city of Jerusalem. Now, where is Ezekiel? What part of Jerusalem? What? He's not in Jerusalem. He's in where?
Babylon.
That's right. How can he know what's going on in Jerusalem? Did he check the internet or what? The Lord's going to tell him. He's a prophet. And he's going to tell him, and Ezekiel's going to talk to what people about that? The Babylonians? The Hebrews that are exiles. And the message he's going to have is not a happy message. It's a message of judgment, so they're not going to like it. But the fact is, he's got to make this, do this work. And so, he's going to take this brick right on at the city of Jerusalem. And then verse 2 and verse 3. We had suggested on your question number 4 on your class lesson that you isolate words or note words that have to do with the siege and exile of Jerusalem. When you get to verse 2 and 3, what words here indicate this? Whatever this sign means, it's about a siege. Right. And then at the end of verse, toward the end of verse 3, you have the same thing. So, the sign, the brick, whatever you're going to do with it, the meaning, the significance is that Jerusalem, their homeland, their capital city, their cherished city where God put his name there, there's going to be a siege by another nation. They're going to siege the city. The city was had walls about it, didn't it? And gates. But an army's going to come and it's going to lay siege to it. And then he's going to talk about what's going to happen as a result of that later in this chapter. But you can read about that siege in 2 Kings. We may turn over there and note something here in a little bit. Where Nebuchadnezzar and his armies came against the city and did lay siege to it for about 18 months. And so they couldn't go out, they couldn't come in. So now he said, indicate this by this sign. He said, raise up a ramp, pitch camps, and place battering rams against it all around. I don't know what he used for these various figures that were to represent this. Text doesn't say. But the meaning is clear. Then get yourself an iron plate and set it up as an iron wall between you and the city, and set your face against it so that it is under siege and besiege it. This is a sign to the house of Israel. Now note, we call them signs. That's what Ezekiel calls them. That's what God calls them. This is a sign. What was the purpose of the iron plate? There's various suggestions about the iron plate. But one of the ideas, at least that seemed reasonable to me, is that there was no way to stop the siege. This army was behind the protection of an iron plate, as it were, and there's nothing that Jerusalem could do to stop this advancing army from doing what they were doing. Whether that's the significance of it, I'm not sure. But be that as it may, we can get the main thrust, and that's what we're looking for, that there's going to be a siege against the city. Now, beginning in verse 4, and one of our questions on your lesson is, question number 5, why did God say these things would happen? Because of their iniquity. So clearly, as you look at verse 4 now, and you get to this second sign, and what is this second sign?
Lay on your side.
Lay on your side. And so he's going to lay on his side on the left and then on the right. And in verse 5, you'll see that there are two time stamps, 390 days in verse 5 and 40 days in verse 6. You see those? We suggested that you mark chronological statements in the book. And if you did, they'll stand out. If you add 390 and 40, you come up with 4:30. Now, why would a Jew, Ezekiel, a prophet, speaking to Jewish people, would 430 have any special significance? Yes, that's the time they were in bondage. And it was a very significant time period. I think it's probably here figurative, because 430 years, as far as trying to figure out actual dates, it just doesn't work out chronologically to anything significant. But 430 years, just like the term Egypt, came to be figurative of their bondage and their oppression. Egypt came to stand for that. You see that in the book of Hosea. If we have time, we can look at it. And so these were symbolic terms. Like we use the term today, he met his Waterloo. What is Waterloo? That's what it suggests to us, but what is it? It's a city in Belgium, right? What?
A great defeat for Napoleon.
I didn't understand you.
A great defeat.
That's what happened there, but that's not what Waterloo is.
For Napoleon.
You're right about that. That's the significance we attach to it. That's what we think about when we say Waterloo, isn't it? We immediately attach a figurative meaning to it. We don't say, go get a map and see where this is at. That's not the idea. What about Watergate? What is Watergate? Sir?
Nixon got impeached.
Is that what Watergate is? Some buildings in Washington, right? But we think of scandal and deceit. Immediately we think of that. See? 13. That's just a number, isn't it? How many elevators have a 13th floor? Why?
Bad luck.
We associate 13 with bad luck. 7?
Good luck.
Good luck. And so, we use certain things that have a literal meaning, but we attach a figurative concept to it. And 430 years, instead of looking for a literal 430 years here, I'm just suggesting you think that to a Jew, that's very, very significant. Same thing with the term Egypt. In Hosea, when he's prophesying to the northern kingdom, he said they're going to be brought back to Egypt. They weren't brought back to Egypt. They were brought to Syria. But Egypt was a symbol of bondage and oppression and destruction. So think about those things as we look at things like this. Remember, this is not written to people in the United States of America in 2016. These are Jews. If 2,000 years from now, somebody hears us talking about Waterloo or Watergate, say, what are they talking about? They might not have any clue. Well, why do they keep bringing up this city, or why do they keep bringing up these buildings in Washington when that's not even on the horizon of what we're talking about? That's just the background to it. All right, so when you read about these days, he's to rely on his side, and the total is 430. The first time, it's for, verse 4, for who? For Israel. So you have the northern and southern kingdom. And the northern kingdom was designated Israel. Sometimes Israel is used to include both of them. But here you have a distinction made in verse 4 and verse 5 with Israel. And then when you get to verse 6, he makes a distinction. He talks about Judah. So you have 390 days and 40 days. Why he divided it, I do not have the answer. He did. But the total is certainly significant to the Jews. And so these were for 430 years. It says day, but they're to represent 430 years. And so he's to, verse 5, bear the iniquity. That is the punishment. It's representative of the punishment that Israel served. And, of course, by this time, the northern kingdom is no more. It ceased to exist in about 722, didn't it? When Assyria came against them. And so now Judah's going to face a similar fate. And we'll see later in the book that he compares the two. They should have learned from what happened to Israel, but they didn't. We don't often learn from history. And He's going to be talking about that later in the book. So then in verse 7, you shall set your face toward the siege of Jerusalem with your arm buried, the idea of action, going to be action, and prophesy against it. Now behold, I put ropes on you so you cannot turn from one side to the other until you've completed the days of your siege. There's no indication in the book that I know of God actually had him bound literally with ropes. We had suggested back in chapter 3 that in verse 25, they'll put ropes on you. There's no indication the people bound him with ropes. That this was the bond back in 325, that is, they tied his hands. They wouldn't listen. And here, bind him with ropes, the moral obligation that he would have before God. He would be bound to this duty, like it or don't like it. Whether or not that's the case or not, as I say, there's no indication that I know of in the book that God ever literally had him bound with ropes. All right, so that's the second sign. So the first sign, the brick, is about this siege. And the second sign, a different kind of sign, but the same message. A siege, and this time incorporating to these people symbols of not only bondage but destruction and oppression, the 430 years in Egypt. Now we have a third sign in verse 9 through 17. So you have three signs in chapter 4. So this time in verse 9, after you take, and then you have six things mentioned. Now you ladies that cook, if you go to the kitchen, hardly anybody makes bread anymore. If you go in the kitchen to make bread, what kind of ingredient is your main ingredient? Flour, okay, maybe wheat flour. But of course, you also go get some flaxseed, and you also go get some barley, and you also go get some spelt, right, to make your bread? No. But what would happen if you went to the cabinet to make your bread and you went to get the flour and there's just maybe a half a cup?
Small loaf.
Huh?
It'd be a small loaf.
It'd be a small loaf. Well, so what could you do to make your full loaf? Go get some other kinds of grains to put with it. You read about this here. You see on the health websites Ezekiel's bread as if it's a health thing. This is a picture of famine. As a result of the siege, the first two signs, you can't go out of the city. You can't farm your land. You can't go get crops. And so he says you take these six things. Whether or not that's the, we can be definite, that's the idea. It does fit with the lesson of the text. And so you got these six things, wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and spelt. Put them in one vessel. There's nothing here about what's healthy for him. As oftentimes these verses are used, but rather about this idea of there's bad, bad time, very critical, famine because of the siege. Put them in one vessel and make them into bread for yourself. You shall eat it according to the number of the days that you lie on your side, 390 days. See, he connects it with the siege. The 390 days back in verse 5, bearing the iniquity of the house of Israel, then the 40 days, and then verse 7, you see he's connecting all of that with the siege of Jerusalem. So it's not our connection. God makes the connection of this bread with this siege and what's going to happen. Down in verse 13, then the Lord says, thus the sons of Israel will eat their bread unclean among the nations where I'll banish them. So he's talking about the city of Jerusalem. So if the people are going to eat the bread among the nations, what's going to happen to them? They're going to go on a vacation?
Exile.
Here's your exile. They're going to be taken out of their homeland. They're going to be taken to other places. And you eat your bread unclean. Now you have this business of the bread. If you read the chapter, he said, you shall eat as a barley cake, having baked it in their sight over human dung. And that's repulsive to us, but there's cases in history of people using at least animal dung for heat. Human dung sounds repulsive, and Ezekiel was repulsed by it. Not that it would have been sinful to eat the bread cooked over human dung, but be that as it may, He had made an appeal to God in verse 14. I've never been defiled from my youth until now. I've never eaten what died of itself or torn of a beast, nor has any unclean meat ever entered my mouth. And God made an allowance and said, okay, I'm going to give you cow's dung for heat. Now, God knew all along what Ezekiel would say, but it made his point. If you're going to build a fire, and maybe it was a common practice in nations back then to use animal dung for fire, but as the siege progressed, you go out in the city to look for animal dung. What's the problem?
There are no animals.
More animals. That's the idea. That's true. Of course, you're not going to get out of the gate because they're going to be guarding, but that's right. And good point that Roddy makes. You can't get out of the gates because the army's out there. So there must have been some, or God in some way provided at least enough for him to do what he's doing. But the point, again, all of this has to do with what's the historical event that's being portrayed by Ezekiel. Now, when is Ezekiel prophesying this? Chapter 1, he tells you how many years after the exile? How many years after? 70. Y'all should have ate eggs and bacon for breakfast. It'll liven you up. What?
30th year.
That's his age. How many years after the exile?
Fifth.
What?
Fifth
year. 5 years. What exile?
Jehoiakim.
When was that? This is that date I tell you I'm going to keep asking you. 598. Get through with this class. You may not know what Ezekiel's about, but maybe you remember 598. 598, 597. Okay? And so 5 years later, he starts prophesying in 592. Now, when is this siege and Jerusalem, when is it going to fall? When Nebuchadnezzar entered the city and burnt the building, destroyed everything? About 586. So we're talking about 6 years later, approximately. And so you have these 6 years that he's going to be prophesying about this siege. And actually, you get to a later chapter, he's prophesying negatively even to 585. But be that as it may, 6 years from now. So imagine looking 6 years into the future about a city hundreds of miles away. The favorite city, let's suppose a prophet today was going to prophesy about the United States of America. What city might they pick?
New York.
L.A. Washington, D.C., the very capital where everything is. Your nation's going to fall. Let me tell you what's going to happen to Washington, D.C. And so this is what he's doing about Judah. Here's what's going to happen to Jerusalem. And he's not reading past news. He's looking 6 years into the future and saying, here's what's going to happen. And it's a very dire picture. It'll be so bad. There'll be this famine. You'll note down in verse 10, your food which you shall eat will be 20 shekels a day by weight. That's about 8 ounces, best I could determine. 8 ounces. You'd like to have to eat all day on 8 ounces? And then the water you drink will be 1/6 of a hen. That's about a pint. So, hey, you can really get fat on that, right? 8 ounces of grain and a pint of water. And not that he drank it in one day, but they're just not much. It's bad times. And so this is the picture of the famine that's going to be facing the city. But it's going to end up, verse 13, in exile. They're going to be taken to the nations and eat bread unclean. Unclean may pertain to the fact that they'd be in unclean nations. They couldn't go to Jerusalem where everything was holy. They'd be in unclean nations. And they would be, in fact, taken to Babylon, a pagan nation, away from their homeland. So this is what he's picturing. So Ezekiel makes this plea in verse 14, and God gives him the opportunity then to cook the bread over cow's dung. Moreover, he said to me, Son of man, behold, I'm going to break the staff of bread. A staff, as you know, is a stick, like they use for a walking stick or something like that. Why does it say staff of bread? If a person has difficulty maybe walking, they might use a cane or a staff for support to help them. And that's the way the word staff is used here. It's not a stick of bread. It's the idea of staff. Remember we talked about imagery, figurative ideas? Staff, that bread is the support of life, is the idea. Bread is what keeps you going. And he said, I'm going to break the staff of bread in Jerusalem. The very things you need to live every day, the basic necessities. And they'll eat bread by weight with anxiety. Remember, we just looked back here about, he told him how much he's going to have to do, how much it's going to weigh, how much water he's going to have to drink. He's going to have to really portion this stuff out. You're not just going to have bread everywhere like before. You can't go out in the field and get some more grain. That's not going to happen because there's a siege against the city. And so they'll eat bread by weight and with anxiety and drink water by measure and in horror, because bread and water will be scarce, and they'll be appalled with one another and waste away in their iniquity. Looks like God would have given them some warning about all of this before it happened, doesn't it?
Jeremiah's been an awful long time talking.
Jeremiah did. Moses did in Leviticus. If we have time, we'll look at some verses. And Deuteronomy. When did Moses live? Right? He lived about 1500 B.C. These warnings have been around a long time. One of the most illustrious prophets, Moses, said, you depart from God, here's what's going to happen. It's interesting, if we have time to read, some of the very things that are prophesied in Leviticus and Deuteronomy that Ezekiel is now talking about here. And then all the prophets down through all these centuries been coming, prophet after prophet after prophet. And as Ronnie mentioned, there's Jeremiah doing his work. But they don't listen. Where does the book talk about them not listening? Where? What chapters? 2 and 3, right? They're not going to listen to you. They haven't listened before. And they're not going to listen. And so God had warned them. This is no surprise. And so in our prayer with Todd, we talked about listening to the lessons that we learned from Ezekiel. Do we listen? And so God's word gives us direction for our lives. If we don't follow it, there's going to be consequences. Some right here in this life, because we're going to pay the consequences of choosing a course that's ruin for ourselves, for family, for our relationship with brethren, and maybe even for our health, but certainly a course that eventually is going to be eternal ruin. And so good lessons here, even for us today. Okay. Now we look at chapter 5. Again, on your lesson, we have two divisions to chapter 5. The first 12 verses, where the sign has to do with the hair, and then in verse 13 through 17, the way I put it, is the summary certification. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Now, that first division can be broken up into three parts. In verses 1 through 4, he talks about the sign itself, what he's to do with the hair. We'll talk about that. And then verses 5 through 11, if you did the markings we suggested about the rebellious, iniquity, those kind of words, boy, it really stands out in this section as to why this is happening. And then in verse 12, he explains the meaning of the sign in verse 12. So 5, 1 through 12 is that sign. But you've got these three subdivisions in that section. All right, so question number one on your class lesson, mark the rebellious family of words. Where do you find those? If you don't mark your Bible, just make notes, list them. What verses do they occur in?
Verse 6.
Verse 6. She has rebelled against my ordinances. She who?
Israel.
Well, Israel, but it's more specific. Look again at verse 5.
Jerusalem.
So cities are compared to women in the Bible oftentimes. She has rebelled. Jerusalem has rebelled. And in verse 6 again, at the end of the verse, they have rejected my ordinances and have not walked in my statutes. You know, people talk about God. People don't understand the God of the Bible. They say, oh, he's so gracious and loving and kind. And he is. We've been discussing a number of lessons on grace here recently in the sermons. He is gracious. But I'll tell you what. If you don't want a caricature of God, instead of understanding the character of God, you need a balanced view of what he is, who he is. Yes, he's gracious, but he expects men to be obedient. And if we want to understand the God of the Bible, we need to study about the gospel and its grace, but we need to study these books as well. The same God. It's not a different God. And he said, because you wouldn't obey, here's what's going to happen to you. It keeps emphasizing that. In verse 7, what phrase in there indicates that same thing? Not walked in my statutes, nor observed my ordinances. And so then you get down to verse 11. He says, your abominations. So I know that the God of the Bible is a God that expects men to walk in his commandments, to keep his statutes.
In 11, wouldn't you also mark Judah defiled?
You could. You could mark the word defiled. I did, but yes, you could. Certainly could. And like I say, on this marking, there's no science to it. It's an art. Each person is going to mark a little bit differently, but it at least gets you to highlight the thread idea. And so, you see in verses 5 through 11, here's why this is happening. Because of your rebellion, you wouldn't listen. All right, let's go back to the first four verses and see what he was to do. Our question number two, what Ezekiel was to do with his hair. So let's look at this. As for you, son of man, take a sharp sword, take it and use it as a barber's razor on your head and beard. Would you like to shave with a sword? Then take scales for weighing and divide the hair. So you're going to divide it into how many parts? Three parts. One third, verse 2. One third again, verse 2. And one third, verse 2. Three parts. And so one third he's going to burn in the center of the city. Where's that? Where is he going to burn it? On that brick. Burn it right there on that brick. The center of the city. Okay, and then one third going to strike with the sword all around the city. So I don't know if he's going to put it on the ground or what he's going to do with it, but that idea that around the brick, around the city, going to use the sword. And then the third one, he's going to scatter to the wind. And I'll unsheath a sword behind them. When you get down to verse 11 and 12, you have this idea of the sword behind them, particularly in verse 12. The sword behind them, the idea of judgment. And so verse 3, take a few in number from them. Depends on how you take verse 3, whether you take it of the whole or of the last third. I take it to be of the last third. And there's two things. I put on your lesson 3. Mark that out and put 2. Somewhere on here, I think I put it on here. Maybe I didn't. Yes, I did on question 2 at the end. The three things that were done with the few in number. Mark the word 3 out and put 2. And so here's the two things that's going to be done with the few in number. He said, and if you, what's a word for few in number? Remnant. Right. And here's what's going to happen. He said, group, some of them can be bound at the edges of your robe. Time won't allow us, but there are verses that indicate that's the idea of protection, preservation. So some of this, of that third group that's going to be scattered to the wind, some of it will be protected, preserved. But then, a second thing's going to happen, some of it's going to be burnt in the fire. In other words, it's going to be consumed, it's going to be destroyed. All right, now, drop to verse 12. Here's your three divisions. We don't have to guess at what they're talking about. He tells you in verse 12. Look at verse 12. One third, what's the first one? Die by the plague or be consumed by famine among you. Remember, he put a fire in the midst of the city. Die by plague or be consumed by famine. One third will fall by the sword around you. So, remember the sword around the city? What's outside the city? The Babylonian armies. If you try to escape, what's going to happen? What happened to Zedekiah and his group when they tried to escape? One third will die, sword around the city. And then the other third, I'll scatter to every wind, and I'll unsee the sword behind them. So here's your exiles. And that there's going to be this exile, we've already read about chapter 4 and verse 13. Chapter 5 and verse 10, he said, I'll scatter all your remnant, the end of chapter verse 10, I'll scatter your remnant to every wind. Look at chapter 6 and verse 8. I will leave a remnant, for you will have those who escape the sword among the nations when you're scattered among the countries. So you see the idea of scattering is the exile, but of those exile, some will be destroyed, but some will be preserved. Okay, so this is the sign with the hair. All right, and look at verse 13 through 17. We got a question number 5 on your lesson. When these signs have been fulfilled, what will they know?
That he is the Lord.
He is the Lord. How will they know it?
Because Ezekiel and the other prophets told them this was going to happen.
That's right. They got to know it because Ezekiel and the other prophets said judgment's coming and judgment came. By judgments. He said, and if you mark that phrase through here, you see in verse 13, my anger will be spent, and I'll satisfy my wrath on them, and I'll be appeased. And they will know that I, the Lord, have spoken in my zeal when I have spent my wrath upon them. Look at anger, wrath, three times in verse 13. Look down at verse 15, at the end of the verse. I'll execute judgments against you in anger, wrath, and raging rebukes. Verse 16. I'll send against them the deadly arrows of famine, which were for the destruction of those whom I will send to you. I'll send these armies, this Babylonian army. And he said, I will intensify the famine on you. Verse 17, I will send on you famine and wild beasts. End of verse 17, I will bring the sword on you. And he says at the end of verse 15 and to the end of verse 17, I, the Lord, have spoken. Yes, Ronnie? Good point. Back in Egypt in the Exodus, same thing. And so when this happened, don't blame some pagan gods. It's not a matter of accident, just a bad weather pattern. It's not that. I'm sending these people. This is a result of my anger and my wrath upon you. You will know when it happens. I'm the Lord. I brought this. And some would be able to do something about it. Who? The remnant who escaped and lived, right? Or the ones that Ezekiel was prophesying to that saw, hey, this is what Ezekiel said happened. But what about those who were consumed? That's it. We don't want to be in that shape. When judgment comes, when we die, we're going to know that He's the Lord. But we won't be able to do anything about it. So here we have these lessons to learn from. Do something about it before then, so we don't face those judgments. Okay. Much more we'd like to say or could say, but our time is up. So chapter 6 and 7, you should have those. If you don't, there's some copies in the back. And we'll do that, the Lord willing, in our Wednesday night class, chapter 6 and 7.